is the Perpetual Notion Machine for Thursday, July 14th, 2016. I'm your host, Lincoln Tice. Thank you to our listeners for joining us this week. Tonight's half-hour show will focus on a very important and elemental substance, water. Water is becoming a bit of an ongoing theme here on the Perpetual Notion Machine. We focused on the Great Lakes Compact several weeks ago, and this week we will focus on water that couldn't be closer to home, the city of Madison's tap water that flows through our pipes. Next week, the topic will continue with a conversation about groundwater versus surface water. There's been quite a bit of news coverage on water quality recently, ever since the contamination of the city of Flint, Michigan's water came to light. But our expert guest tonight, Abigail Cantor, has been working on issues of drinking water quality for nearly four decades. Ms. Cantor is a local chemical engineer who has consulted with the city of Madison. She is the current chair of the research committee of the American Water Works Association Wisconsin chapter and a member of the American Water Works Association Lead and Copper Rural Task Advisory Work Group. She has also received numerous awards, including the 2015 Most Notable Contribution to the Science of Public Water Supply. Abigail, welcome, and thank you for joining me in the station today.
Thank you.
So I first heard about you, Abigail, back in February when I read a newspaper article from the State Journal on Madison.com. The drinking water crisis in Flint was in the news at the time, and the article was headlined, "Years before Flint's scandal, Madison did unusual, costly lead pipe fix." According to the article, you were the private consultant who convinced the city to undertake a nearly $20 million project to replace all of the lead water mains back in 2001. Is this true?
Yes, it did start with the experiments that I was running out in the field.
Oh, great. Well, as someone who began drinking Madison tap water in 2004, when I was a poor college student who was too cheap to buy a Brita filter, I really appreciate your work. How did you do it? Can you tell me the story?
Yes. In 1991, the lead and copper rule became one of our drinking water regulations. And lead and copper are contaminants that are not typically in the source water. It's out in the distribution system. So the water interacts with piping material
right. And
pulls it in. So it was a new regulation, and there wasn't much knowledge about how to really deal with it. The regulations have a rather simple step-by-step procedure. So I was actually working for a larger consulting firm at the time and was sent to Madison Water Utility to get them into compliance with the law.
Okay. So I can understand lead. I know lead is very toxic, very harmful, I believe, to brain development. Is that true?
Well, I'm not a health expert, but I understand it does affect the neurological system.
Okay, but copper, I haven't really heard too much about, the toxicity of copper.
Well, copper is not a health hazard to the degree that lead is. The toxicologists tell us that in our water we should have zero parts per billion of lead, but for copper, up to 1,300 parts per billion is considered the health limit goal.
Okay, and you're telling me that there was no lead rule until around the millennium, is that right?
Well, the lead and copper rule came on the books in 1991. Before that, there were various regulations, but nothing as stringent and all-encompassing as the lead and copper rule.
Okay. And I understand that when this was proposed, no cities had ever taken the steps to remove all of their lead water supply pipes. So this was very controversial, very expensive. I understand there were other options. For example, the municipality can add an anti-corrosive agent so that lead will stay in the pipe, I believe, and not enter the water. I know there are other options. Can you tell Can you tell us about why you recommended that they actually dig up all the pipes and replace them?
Actually, the existing lead and copper rule says you must try one of these chemicals before you even replace pipes. And that's probably going to change when they rewrite the rule. So the regulations are actually based on a theoretical model of how lead leaves the pipe wall and gets into the drinking water. I, like everyone else, was just following the directive, doing the testing out in the field in the way that was written to do. But I began to get data that didn't agree with what the regulation was saying. And also just the data from actual homes didn't seem to coincide with what the regulation was saying was a simple step process. When I did the testing of these chemicals, of which there's not that many to choose from, I basically tested all of the options.
These are the anti-corrosives? Am I saying that right?
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
They had surprising effects that had not been predicted. One of them actually increased the lead in the water by 4 times.
Wow.
Others had other issues. Chemical strategy made the water drop its natural calcium and magnesium out to the point where it clogged up the pipes. So I was finding results like this. And after quite extensive testing, I went to the general manager of the water utility and said, this doesn't sync up with what the regulation is saying. Here's my data. You can't use any of these chemicals. You really need to get the lead out of the system. Now, it was the general manager at the time who took the initiative to actually make what is seemingly impossible happen. And that's when I step out of the picture, and the general manager and the engineers at the utility take over.
Okay, so going back, your testing that you were doing was in people's houses. So had the city already implemented adding these anti-corrosives?
Oh, no. The testing I was doing was all done offline. You can set up an apparatus of pipes and run water through it, turning the water on and off as if it was a house. And then you take the water samples from these pipes, and the water that runs through the pipes goes to waste. So no one was drinking the water. The city didn't experiment on people. It was an offline apparatus. There was a lot of testing in homes just to see what people were receiving.
Okay, so you were doing this like in a lab?
I was doing it in a well house. We set up pipe loop apparatuses, is what they're called, down in the basement of a couple of the well houses, where we could pull water that had directly entering the distribution system from the well, and it flowed through these pipes just as it flows through a building plumbing system.
Okay, and I know that Madison has somewhat unique tap water, or groundwater, maybe I should say. Like, we have hard water, correct?
Yes.
Is that, in your research, is that something that contributed to these results that people weren't necessarily expecting?
Not really. There were and still are a lot of basic assumptions as to how different water characteristics will affect the transfer of lead into the water. And what I've found in my subsequent work in water distribution systems is a lot of those assumptions are incorrect. So according to the regulation and the theoretical model that it's based on, Madison's water should be highly corrosive to lead pipes, and it turns out it's highly non-corrosive.
And why did the model predict, what is it about Madison's water that the model predicted would corrode the pipes?
The model is based solely on the carbonate concentration in the water. And another way to say carbonate concentration is alkalinity of the water. So Madison has a very uniquely high alkalinity.
Okay, so it's basic then, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that is because of our limestone, which is calcium carbonate, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Our limestone bedrock?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what did you find, or can you expound on that a little bit more about what you found? What do you attribute? Like, what did you discover?
Well, I discovered that high alkalinity water does not necessarily translate to a water that's corrosive to metals and especially lead. I did further testing in Madison later on as they changed out the lead pipes, and I've also developed my own monitoring technique to get representative information out of water distribution systems. So I have data from water systems not only all over the state but all over the country. And what I find is it's not this simplistic carbonate model that runs our regulations that's the controlling factor. There's actually a number of controlling factors. Two of the big ones are the chemical debris that has built up on pipe walls in the water mains actually shapes our water quality, and then microorganisms in those pipe wall debris and in the water also shape our water quality.
Wow, so that's very interesting to me because I had never thought of microorganisms impacting our water quality in our pipes. You know, I assumed that it was kind of a sterile environment at that point. Also, going back, the minerals that are on the pipes, is that like the calcium that's built up? I think you said chemicals. Is it minerals that are naturally occurring in water or...
Yes. Water, as you recall from chemistry class, is the universal solvent. So when our water comes out of the ground, it has interacted with the geology and the soils and has quite a number of chemical compounds in it. And just to go further down the pipe, when it gets into the water distribution system, a lot of those chemicals go through reactions and they drop out and build up as scale on the pipe wall. So iron and manganese are two big ones in Wisconsin.
Okay. Is calcium one as well?
Yes, of course. We've got a high concentration of calcium. That's why we call it hard water. We have very hard water, so we've got a lot of calcium and magnesium that can also drop out. But it's not as big a factor in terms of the corrosion chemistry.
Gotcha. And can this ever cause pipes to actually plug up?
Yes, small diameter pipes can become clogged under certain conditions.
Okay, so you mentioned manganese. Is manganese harmful to humans, do you know?
Well, one of our long-held traditions in drinking water is that both iron and manganese were just nuisance chemicals. They get to a certain concentration, they can stain sinks and laundry. It does turn out that rather high levels of iron and manganese can cause health problems.
Oh, really? Because I assumed, because iron is a necessary nutrient, I assumed that more iron would always be good.
Well, there's always a limit of what's good and what's bad.
Yeah, everything in moderation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what about the microbiology of Madison's water? Are there certain specific microorganisms that we're living in, that are living in our pipes that are affecting our water chemistry and giving these unexpected results?
Microorganisms are everywhere in our environment, and in any water system, there's communities of microorganisms living in there. The trick is to keep them from growing excessively and building up biofilms or attaching to the surfaces of the pipe walls. This, however, is a whole area of water quality that many of my colleagues find hard to integrate into their investigations and their perspective, but it's a very important perspective.
Yeah, I would imagine, because they must not be biologists, right? What is the background of most? I know you're a chemical engineer.
Yes, I am. I do have just a chemical background, as well as many researchers in my field, and that I think has been the problem. People are not measuring for these biological factors, and even a non-microbiologist can do some very straightforward measurements and be able to understand how the microorganisms may or may not be influencing the water quality.
So in your work, have you had to educate yourself about microorganisms much more?
Yes, and I made friends with a number of microbiologists as well.
There you go. I know we have lots of those here in Madison. Okay, so you've said that you found that the city of Madison's water was not corrosive. So to me, that implies that maybe this lead in the pipes is not a big issue. But I know the city decided that it was. So how did that come about?
Well, whenever there is a major lead source in a water system, it should be removed, because you are removing a great potential to harm people. So even though it's Madison's water is not highly corrosive, there still is lead that does come off in minute quantities, and it can build up in various areas of a house plumbing system. So the best strategy is to do whatever you can to get pure lead out of water systems. That's a basic step.
Okay, and I know this is very expensive to dig up all of the pipes. I also went into the city water department today, and I spoke with Dave Grandy, I believe.
Joe
Grandy. And he said that usually when municipalities attempt this, a big problem, a big pushback is from the property owners, because the city only owns, up to near the house, and then the property owners have to foot the rest of the bill, because that is also usually lead going into the house. Was that one of the challenges that the city dealt with, do you know?
Yes, definitely, and that's what other cities are also struggling with. There's water mains out in the street, and buildings connect through what's called a service line, and there's a valve in the middle of your front yard, probably. It's called a curb stop. The city owns from the water that service line from the water main up to the valve, and then you or the property owner owns the service line from the valve to the house.
So this $19.4 million, I believe, that the whole project cost, did that include any help to the property owners on that side of the valve?
Yes. The general manager at the time was trying to make this financially feasible, and having property owners having to pay for this big part of it was a big stumbling block. He went to the Public Service Commission, which regulates the how much our water costs in any city. They didn't want to put the cost of changing the private pipes on the city because that sets a precedent for other utilities like electrical utilities. So there was some clever maneuvering around so that people could be reimbursed for a portion of their expense. And, of course, if somebody didn't have the money at all, they were subsidized.
Okay. And he was also saying that it's actually even worse to just replace the pipe on the city side of the valve because that dislodges lead from the joint.
Well, anytime you work around pipes, you rattle them, and on most pipes there's some degree of accumulation of chemicals and biofilms that have built up on a pipe wall. So you can even have a big truck drive down the road and sort of rattle the pipes and get the debris entrained in the water. So if the city comes and just replaces their portion, it disturbs the existing portion of lead pipe. And now you not only have this source of lead, but you've got the debris that was sitting on that source of lead now entrained in the water for quite a long time.
Do you measure that when work is done on water pipes? And do you recommend that homeowners flush their, or keep running their faucet to flush that through?
When a lead service line is changed out, whether it's the partial line or the complete line, there needs to be a lot of flushing from inside the house to get particulates out of the water. And the water does need to be tested over time to determine when those particulates have settled down.
Man, I'm really impressed. I know that this program that Madison undertook, it was the first in the nation, and now it's looked at as a model that other cities want to emulate. Apparently, Milwaukee has been ordered by the Public Service Commission to take care of their lead pipes, and that price tag on that is extremely high, like in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're having a lot of trouble with the property owners also footing their portions of the bill. So it's very impressive that Madison, was such a national leader in this. Also, with all the attention that Flint has been getting about lead, that was anti-corrosive that failed in Flint, wasn't it?
No. Well, this is sort of a long story, and I know we don't have time to get into it. Many people say quite simply, if they had only put this anti-corrosive chemical in the water, they wouldn't have had the problem. But based on the work that I've done and the data I've collected, that's a very simplistic view, and it's most likely not true. So I'm sure you don't want to go into that at this point.
Well, it's very fascinating. I know there are a lot of politics involved, too, with Michigan and the cost-saving measures that were involved at the time. I had a couple more questions about the city of Madison's water quality now, since this program has been implemented. I know we have won several national awards for the quality of our drinking water. I think a taste test, perhaps?
Oh, I don't recall, but there are a number of competitions that utilities can join, and I think Madison's a good candidate.
Are you still involved in consulting for the city, Abigail?
I have done several projects, various aspects of water quality since that time in 1992 or whatever. So I have done some other studies for them. Yes.
Are there any future up and coming contaminants that you think the city is getting a head start on, or that we should be concerned about in the future? I know nitrates is a big problem in Wisconsin water due to agriculture and the dairy industry. What other things might we be concerned about in the future in our drinking water?
Well, as our populations increase, we have more stress on our aquifer. We may have a lot of water, but it won't be as good quality as we overpump in the aquifer. So all cities in Wisconsin have to be thinking about that. We have to worry about contaminants that come to the source, and that's a little more straightforward to measure and to prevent from getting to us. And then, like I said, any water system, including Madison, who's already done a good job, they still need to be vigilant, like every water system, to keep the water system clean and keep the microorganisms in check.
Okay, that's it for tonight's episode of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Thank you very much to our local expert, Abigail Cantor of Process Research Solutions, LLC, for visiting us in the studio. Thanks to Kai Brito for engineering the show. The show was produced by myself, Lincoln Tice. If you'd like to get involved in making Perpetual Notion Machine a reality each week, visit the station website at www.wortfm.org. You can also find show summaries and podcasts here, or shoot us an email at scienceonwart@gmail.com. That's it for this week, but be sure to tune in for another episode of the Perpetual Notion Machine. We will continue the discussion about our local water supply here in Madison with Ken Bradbury from the USGS, scheduled to educate us about our groundwater resource. Thanks for listening.